Today, what we are going to do is we'll look at some of these things in a more detailed experience, basically. We'll walk through some of the advanced features. So for a quick recap, what we'll do is we'll look at the BizTalk service architecture. You know, it's a recap of what we talked about yesterday, what Srivastava walked through. Then we'll look at some of the messaging basics. We'll touch upon how you can do some of the things like enrichments and all the stuff. And then we'll touch upon how you can test your application, troubleshoot, do some diagnostics. We'll also look at some basic management about your application, about your environment, BizTalk service environment. And then we can dig deeper into how you can extend your application, right? So there are various extensibility and points that we have given. So we'll go look at some of those things. And then we'll have a discussion around some of the future-looking thoughts that we have. So this is what Srivastava explained yesterday about your BizTalk service environment, right? So you have your BizTalk service environment, and it is a dedicated, pertinent environment that we create for you. And when you have your dedicated pertinent environment, you get compute isolation, you get security isolation, so you get predictable performance. You're not sharing it with anybody. And you create your environment through the portal. Once you have your environment, you can deploy, you can create your apps in Visual Studio, you can download your SDK, deploy your, create your app, and then you can deploy your app. And then you can send messages through the service endpoint that we provide. Along with that, I mean, we have seen that you require some access control service because we authenticate the endpoint with access control service. And as you process the message, we are going to emit tracking information into a SQL database that you provide. And all the monitoring and health information will be in the storage account, okay? We also saw that there are some concepts that you may want to understand about BizTalk service. So you have tools and applications on the left side. You have the Azure portal, you have Visual Studio, you have partial scripts that you can use to interact with BizTalk service. You have the monitoring store, you have the config store, you have the tracking store on the other side that stores the information. And in between, we have seen that there are certain concepts like bridges, artifacts, and trading partner management. We saw what a bridge was. A bridge is a core integration, is a core building block of your integration application. And we provide different kind of bridges. We've seen XML, XML requests, XML one-way, EDI. We also provide pass-through bridge, which essentially lets just pass the message through. In order to use your application, there are certain key artifacts that you typically use, like certificates, like assemblies. Assembly would be custom code. We'll see an example of how you can use some of those things. You have the other common artifacts, like schemas and transformation that you use. Schemas will define what the message format would be. A transformation will define how you transform an incoming message to another format, right? So basics of messaging. We touched upon this yesterday. I'll briefly talk about some of these things. So essentially, we provide pattern-based integration. And some of the functionality that we provide out of the box include ability to validate an incoming message, perform enrichment on the message. By enrichment, you could supplement the incoming message with interesting data. You can transform the message, as I said, and you can route it to one of many destinations that you may want based on routing rules. So what is validation? Validation specifies whether an incoming message conforms to a specific XML schema. And we'll show an example of how you can do that. So let's go back to an example, right? So On the screen, you can see my you can see the order processing application that we created. The only difference with this order processing application and the one that we saw yesterday was that I just deleted the FTP source. Okay, nothing else. That's because I wanted this session to be more interactive. By the way, I just want to check how many of you have played with BizTalk service environment? Have you guys tried creating one? Okay, that's fairly large, good. So yesterday we showed you how you can download this, you can create this application. So when you drop your pipeline here and you want to do validation, what you can do is you just specify the incoming message type. So this is a message type that we show on the screen. And here you can see that there are various message types, right? So if you want validation, these are available message types, and you can say which of these message types that you want your pipeline to support. So you can say this is a message type, you can add it, right? So all the available message type, you'll find it here. Okay. So this was a flat file. Maybe if I add, okay, oops. Okay, I just have to add the message type here. Right, let me do one thing. Let me add the schemas once more. You can say, oops, this resolution is. So these are the schemas I have. So let me just add these two schemas. Let me just remove the ones that I've added, right? So you start with this blank. I have added the schemas that I want. And you can see that the different schemas are available here, right? So there is PO1 that I wanted and PO2 that I wanted, right? Sorry. So this is how you can add your schemas. When you do that, the pipeline knows that these are the message types that it will be handling, right? And in validation stage, you can just, if you look at the property here, is it okay if I change the resolution a little bit? You can see that this is enabled, right? So that means there are certain, a message type that we are expecting here. So this is how you do validation. It's simple. You just add the types of the schemas that you want to validate against. You select the schemas that you add the schemas in the project, and then you just select the schemas that you want, right? So the next thing that I want to talk about is I'll just walk through. Enrichment, right? So enrichment define interesting properties that you want to use in your pipeline. Now, this interesting properties could be used for routing. To give specific examples, you may want to say that, okay, I have an incoming message, and I want to route if the order size is greater than 1,000, I want to handle it differently, right? So you may want to say, hey, what is the order size? So the order size is probably coming from the message itself, right? So you could define an XPath in your message and say, with this expat, this is the order size, define a property called order size, you know, associate with that, and then you can just route it. Once you define that property, you can have routing rules that says, if the order is size is greater than 1,000, route it to this external endpoint. If the order size is less than 1,000, route it to this, you know, normal endpoint, right? You can do that. The other sources of data could even be external lookup, external data lookup, which means if I have, say, you know, product ID coming in, right? And I want to look up, okay, this product ID, which endpoint should I be routing to? Typically, you have a product ID coming in, you know, that may belong to, you know, a set of product family. So you may want the external lookup to say which product family it belongs to. It, the data itself may not be coming from the incoming message. So you could have an external data lookup to fetch that product family. So these are examples of enrichment. So if I go back to VS now, the way you can do enrichment is in this enrich stage, you can define the set of properties that you want. So I don't have any property here. So let's look at, you know, some of the complex examples, and then we can see, like, you know, how it can be done. So in this example, what I have is I have a set of incoming orders, right? So if look at what we do in this incoming orders, and let's see what we do in the enrichment stage here. Oops, sorry. So look at the enrichment stage. What I have done is I have defined an expat, which means that I want to look up in the message, incoming message, okay? And this is the expat that I have, okay? And this property name is called quantity, right? And this is data type, right? You can select one of the available data type, like is it Boolean, date, time, double, long, and string, right? So these are the data types that we provide. Okay, so defining an property is easy. Now you ask me, like, how do we get this, you know, expat and all? So that shouldn't be very hard. So what we can do is we can just open this schema. This is the schema editor. If you guys use BizTalk server, you would know that this is the same schema editor that we provide. So you can see that these are the various, this is the schemas, these are various nodes that I have, right? So in each of the nodes that you see, you'll find that there is a instance expat that we provide. So you don't have to just, you know, create your expat, because we know that is, you know, it can be, you can easily make mistakes. It's not that simple. But you can just copy paste from the schema editor. Yes?
What happens if I accept multiple schemas, income schemas that you have now?
Mm-hmm.
And the X part only applies to one of them. Would that cause an error exception?
No, yeah, good question. What happens if there are multiple schemas, right? So let's go back and see, you know, once more how you define that property. So I did this one. Here is the message type, right? So when you have multiple schemas, you can select one of the schemas here, and you can say in this schema, this is the expat that I want, right? Which means if you are handling multiple XML formats, XML data coming in, you can just select the one that you want to define with, and then you can define the expat. Answers your question?
Yeah.
Thanks. Yeah. The other way of defining properties is, as I said, there are various sources, various sources of data from where you can define the property. So, for instance, it could be from a SOAP header. It could be, if it is coming from HTTP, it could be HTTP. You can have external data lookup. You have expat, FTP, SFTP. So the more sources that you put in here, you know, you'll start showing up, you know, some of those data source, right, from where you can define those properties, right? So for instance, if you want to say, okay, I just want to do some routing based or define a property based on the request ID of the incoming message, you can just select the system and you can select a request ID here. We also make available certain system properties like, you know, receive time, at what time was the message received. Some of these things are interesting in case you want to, you know, define these properties and log this data to see like, okay, what time did the message come in and so on, right? We also have like source name and the source type. Source name would define, so source type will define if it is FTP, HTTP, this kind of stuff, where is the message coming from. And source name will define, okay, which if you have multiple FTP servers from which you are pulling the data, which FTP server are we referring to, right? Source specific properties, like if you have selected FTP, you have properties like, okay, what was the file name of the incoming message, right? What is the server address? What is the folder from which you picked up that message and so on, right? So these are certain properties that we define. So you can try out and you can try creating your app and see, okay, if, you know, depending on, you know, the kind of routing rules that you want to specify, you can define your own properties here. So once, why is this one interesting? I said it can be used in routing rules. So how do we do that, right? So if you go back to this app, what is this app? This app is trying to model is, I have an incoming order coming in. I have an incoming order. And it can be routed to, you know, one or two endpoints. Okay, there are again, you know, bridges. I said you can chain bridges as we mentioned last time. You can see that in this filter condition, the properties that I have defined, like quantity, this is a property that I just defined, right? So the quantity, I've created a filter that says that if a quantity is greater than 1,000, we route it to this particular bridge, right? And this is where, you know, you may calculate your discount and you may send it to, you know, another endpoints, right? If not, we'll just send it to, you know, some other queue, right? This is what the application is really doing. So the next thing I wanted to touch upon is transformation, basically, right?
Question.
Yeah, sure.
Is there any way where you could enrich like a send port or receive port name, rather?
What do you mean by generate a send port or a receive port? Can you just explain?
Promote a property and get what receive port the file came in from.
Okay. So I just showed you, like, you know, those data is available when you define the property. So let's say you want to add one, right? And you can say system. And you can see that we have something called a source name and the source type. This identifier, the system properties will give you from which source it came from. So the equivalent of a, you know, receive port, right? And BizTalk service would be the sources here, right? Okay?
Another question.
Sure.
Will those system properties and the other properties connected to a specific protocol that you receive messages from, will those persist with the message, or do you have to write them to your own property here? Or write to
so,
it persist with the message?
Right.
As the old message.
Right. So the question was, all these properties that I'm showing, does it persist with the message, or, you know,
do they disappear,
or does it just disappear, right? Or do I have to define these properties? So in the runtime, we have all this data available in the runtime, right? So they don't really go along with messages, but they're there in what we call as an application context, right? But that is an internal, you know, format. You know, internal data that we sort of, you know, make it available. If you really want to use it in your application, you have to define a property. This way you know that, okay, this is the property that I'm interested in which case we make it available to, you know, the constructs that you want to use. Like in routing, you can use that, right? For instance, let me just, you know, show you how that works, right? For instance, when I go back to this routing filter, right? We also have something called as a route action. So route action is something that applies when a message is routed to this particular destination, right? So if I go and want to add a route action, so I can say these are the set of properties that I've defined. So you can see that the properties that I have defined, like quantity, is showing up here. It doesn't mean that the data, like, okay, what is the source name, is like suddenly gone. It's not. But if you want to use it, you have to define a property, and then you know you will be able to use that. Okay. So coming back, so this route action that we talked about is interesting because let's say you want to route it to an external web service, right? And typically when you call an external web service, there are certain properties that you want to specify, like which operation I want to call, I want to invoke. Say you have a SOAP web service endpoint, and that SOAP service web service endpoint accept incoming data, but typically most SOAP services will require a SOAP action to be present, right? So in which case, what you can do is you can define a route action where you will specify the SOAP action. Okay. So, yeah, sure. Right. Yes. I'll come to the tracking, but you're right in the sense that when you promote it, we will automatically track those data so that, because when you promote a property, it means that this is a property that I'm interested in, right? In the rest of my systems. So when we write the tracking data, we'll also write all your promoted properties, all the properties that you have promoted. That way, you know at what, in various stages of the processing, okay, what is the value of that promoted property? Right? It helps in troubleshooting. Okay?
This talk server automatically tracks the
behavior is exactly
the behavior, yes. Okay. The behavior is very similar to what you get in BizTalk server. So if you promote your properties, we also track that.
It's just promoted automatically.
Yep. The behavior is exactly like promoted properties.
Okay. So once you have this enrichment, right, I just want to talk about how you can do, transformation. So for doing transformation, let's just open a transform and see, how that works, right? So, sorry, there's the schemas. There's a transform. Sorry, guys, resolution is not that great. So this is the specific transformation that we provide, which transforms from an incoming purchase order to another format, which is also called purchase order, right? And as I mentioned yesterday, right, there are various operations that you can perform, like string operations, looping, expressions, list operations, cumulative. There are bunch of them that we provide. So if you compare this one with what you get in BizTalk server transformation, you'll find that this one is a lot easier. Okay. So one of the construct that I want to explain is map eats, basically. So if you look at the looping operations, we have four eats, map eats, basically. It allows you to loop through constructs. Like, so in this case, for instance, a purchase order have multiple line items. All I'm saying is map all the line item here, right? So I want to map the item code, but here what I can see is I have this quantity, right? And I have this additional discount that I've done. Okay, so let's just see what this one is. So if the quantity is more than 200, okay? This is a logical expression. If the quantity is more than 200, this is the expression that I want, right? You assign a discount of 5. So that means we'll will give you a discount of 5%, right? So this is simple transformation that you can construct, basically, right? You have a logical expression that says if the quantity is more than 200, apply a discount of 5. Yes?
Is there any future plans to include this mapper in another version of this talk server?
Is there a plan to bring this mapper to another version of BizTalk server? That's a feedback that we'll take. Vivek mentioned, right? Ultimately, what we want is we want symmetry within the service and the server. So at some point in time in future, we'll get it. But at this point, I don't think we have any definite timeline which says, you know, when this will be available. Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so when we started building this transformation engine, right, we do have support for XSLT because we know that a lot of customers are still using XSLT, so we do have it. At the same time, we want to be future-looking in the sense that, okay, what if my payload is not XML, right? So we started out by building a transformation engine that can cater to different data format. XSLT works only with XML. But in future, we expect the data format. We expect to support data format like JSON, right? Even .NET types. Okay, so that is why we started with the transform engine, which can cater to such data format. Okay. So the underlying technology is not based on XSL. So we have our own transformation engine that we wrote basically for this one.
The answer to that would be, can I export this into an XSLT?
Is it probably the other way around?
Can it export an XSLT? Okay, we don't do that currently.
But so the underlying framework transformations are not available to the developer to manipulate directly.
Right now, no. But we do have the object model for our transform. So we have an object model, but right now it's not available for developers where you can embed this one in your own application. Okay? Sure.
Are there any plans to allow us to take our existing maps and convert them into these transform files?
Yes, we do have, you can do that in two ways, basically. One is, as a gentleman was just asking, right, what about XSLT? We do support XSLT, so if you have your own XSLT, you can just, you know, take that XSLT, copy paste it here, okay, and it will work. That's one way of using that. In which case, you know, whatever transformation that you have created in BizTalk server or any other tool, you know, just create the corresponding XSLT and just it will work. The other way is we also have a migration tool, okay, that we released. So which can take your map and, you know, it will convert the corresponding TRFM, in which case you can visually modify the maps and so on. Okay? Yes. So if you look at it, this transformation engine, right, is really, really powerful. We do have support for C# scripting as well. And later in the presentation, I was planning to walk through some of those things. But yes, we do have support for that. You can just write a small inline C# script, and this transformation engine will just run that. Okay. So there are a lot of advanced constructs in this transformation engine, right? Some of the things like list operation, like how do you create a list? So I don't want to go through each of those things because that is very, very broad. But what you can do is if you go to the samples, right? So and I can probably show you, you know, the samples that we have, right? So let me just show it directly from the source repo. So that's weak. Please don't get put off by the path. So if you look at these samples, so we have a bunch of samples that you can explore. This gives, you know, the power of the transformation engine. It tells you like how you can do from simple transformation to, you know, complex, you know, transformations. So I would encourage you to sort of explore some of these samples because the transformation engine is really powerful. We have support for, you know, custom XSLT if you have your own XSLT, right? We have different examples, like you can flatten the records, how to flatten, you know, a record. So if you have your incoming data structure and you want to flatten it to say, okay, I want a flat list, right? Some of these things, we give you specific examples how you can do, you know, some of the constructs that we have provided, right? It makes it extremely easy because the ability to loop around some of those things and apply logic, you know, makes such, the expressiveness is very, very high, right, with the construct operations that we have provided. So we have example for simple list operations, nested looping, and so on, right? So each of these things are fairly advanced, fairly complex, okay? And you can look at the samples and you can try out, you know, some of this transformation. If we have time, we can probably come back and, you know, I can show you like some of these things. Okay, so now you have your transformation. So this completes sort of, you know, the basic message processing, right? So just a recap, you have bridges that can do some basic validation, enrichment, transformation, and basic routings. And the routing is just, you know, just draw this line. And while you are doing the routing, you can specify the filter condition based on which you'll route the message. And you can also specify some routing actions that you want to perform, right? When we do the routing, what we do is we also decide in what order this destination should be evaluated. This filter rule should be evaluated, right? Because it's a content-based routing. It's not a subscription base. As in, like, if you have two rules, we'll route it to the first matching rules and not to all the rules, all the destinations that matches that particular rules. Okay, so we have a route order table where you can select, okay, what is the sequence, what is the order in which you should be evaluating the destinations. Okay, so you can. So I have two destinations here. So first, I'll check if this is the condition, and then I'll check if this is the, you know, if it matches, it will route it here. If the filter condition doesn't matches, it will go and go to the next destination, evaluate. If it matches, it will route it here. That's how it works. Okay? Simple. Doesn't have to, you know, think too much. So the gentleman over there had a question on how you can track messages if you promote the properties and all. So we have, you can also specify whether you want to track the messages, you know. By default, we track some specific events. We don't track, you know, everything. So, but you could choose whether you want to track more events, like every message processing events that happens, you want to track that. Or you can say, and also you can say, okay, whether you want to track specific message properties. So if you have like tens of properties, you can select, okay, I want to track only this, three specific properties. So these are some of the things that you don't see in BizTalk server today, but with this one, you know, you could selectively choose. So if you don't want to track like hundreds of properties, if you are interested in only some key set of properties at every bridge, right? You could choose that, you could do that. Or if you want to track everything, you could just select, okay, track all Mrs. properties. It's as simple as that.
Question?
Sure.
Is there any reason why you're not using the service bus topics engine for pubs up over
simple routing? So in an integration, typically what we saw was it's mostly content based routing that you want. If you want to use a pub sub engine, you could still bring your own service bus. And as Vivek and Scott was telling yesterday, right, the whole integration stack is BizTalk service. You have different pieces available. Service bus is definitely one of them. So you can just, all you need to do is just drop your own queue, and you have pub sub working.
Question.
Sure.
Those tracking sections, is that like continuously throughout the bridge, or is it just in the beginning of it, or the end of the bridge? The message transforms within the bridge.
So at, what happens when you track messages, right? I'll explain,
Is it continuously all the changes?
Yes. Yes. So when you say, let me just bring up the dialog, right? That will probably explain. So when you say track message processing events, by default, I said we track only some specific events, which is like when you're routing it. Okay, you will find only a very small set of events, basically. We don't track like what happens in each of the individual stages, right, when it goes through. But when you select that track all message processing events, it will start tracking at each individual event. So you also have that flexibility, right? What we don't provide is we don't go and say, okay, in this particular stage, you just track it. That seems like too much of a, and we haven't really heard anybody asking for something like that. Yeah? Okay. The question was if you're picking a file from an FTP server and you're routing it, say, to destinations, and in one part it's successful, in the other part it's not successful, what happens, right? So the way it works is whenever the FTP source pick up a message from the FTP server, it will send it to the rest of the pipeline for processing. It is not going to delete the file until the processing is complete. So in the second case, when it failed, it will receive a notification saying, okay, the processing has failed. Then the FTP source will not delete that file. That file will still be there. What is going to happen is, after some time, we'll again go to the FTP server and try to pick up the file again. So again, it may try to, send the same file, and again it will fail. So what we have for the FTP source is we have a inherent exponential backup algorithm, where if the number of failures that you encounter in a certain poll is more than a certain threshold, we'll increase the polling interval. So we have those are all internal logic that we have defined as part of the FTP source. So right now, with FTP, at least we don't have a way to take that poison message, right, or that message which has failed out of the system, in the sense that it will still be there. Okay, so we will have tracking information that says that the processing has failed. So you should be able to see those tracking information that it has failed. But with FTP, we don't have a concept, or at least currently we don't have a concept of something called a dead letter queue, where you just want to take it out and put it somewhere, which is probably what you are hinting at. But yes, that's one of the things that we are looking at. And okay. So once you have developed your application, right, we showed you how you can deploy it. You can just build it, and you can, you know, the Solution Explorer. You can just build it, and you can just deploy. And when I deploy, where's my, okay, it's building, right? It asks for your ACS namespace, issuer name, issuer secret, so that you can connect to the endpoint, authenticate, and you can deploy your app, right? Sorry, let me just bring it up. This is the endpoint that we created yesterday, so you can just go and deploy it once more. Sorry.
I noticed that there's the URIs and stuff are getting set in text fields, in property values. How do you have a collection of environments?
I'm not too sure about that. What we do provide is, you know, when you you have developed your app here, right? So when you develop your app, just do a recap, right? Let me just spin this property. Spin. You can see that these are the bridges, right? This has, you know, relative address, okay, that you have specified. It doesn't include the full. You don't provide the full. What is it? A URL basically of your service environment. The URL of the service environment currently is part of your project. If you look at this one, you have a Bistock service URL. So if you change your Bistock service environment, say from your one developer environment to another developer environment or to your test environment, all you need to do is you just have to change this one, nothing else.
Is he not talking about the external dependency?
You're talking about external dependencies? Like name of the queues and all? Okay.
So the equivalent of binding files.
The equivalent of adapter binding files and the SUG service, yes. So currently, the reason why you're not seeing that today is that's because, you know, we have APIs where you can do that, but we do not have a tooling experience around it. Okay, but if you look at, you know, the way we have built all of these things, right? All these things, as I mentioned yesterday, are configuration driven. Okay, there is nothing that stops somebody from coming back and changing the configuration. So the binding file would be this configuration. Take this configuration, we'll probably have a tooling management tooling experience around it, and that's one of the key areas that we are planning to invest, and where you can just go select and, you know, change the configuration. Currently, what you do is you just change the configuration here, and you can just, you know, deploy it in your target environment.
I'm very happy you're working on that.
Yes.
You mentioned there's an API with the configuration.
Sorry? So the API is currently, as I said, we need to polish some of the APIs. When we want, we do not have that public, but yes, definitely those would be in our, you know, future. So coming back to this one, right? Like once you have deployed your app, right? I think we just deployed the app. Sorry? Oh, okay, sorry. We do not support, but there is nothing that stops you from using Visual Studio or any TFS and storing your, you know, project in that TFS, right? Because that is where, you know, the Microsoft ecosystem comes into play, right? So Microsoft has a Visual Studio development environment, and that is why we are also providing this one as a Visual Studio project. So it just behaves as just any other VS project. So, So once you have deployed your application, the next thing that you may want to do is, how do I send messages to this one, right? And how many of you have played with samples in the preview or something, and you know, you're using the message sender tool to do that? OK? Good. So as part of the samples, we have a message sender tool, which is a command line utility. And you can type a bunch of parameters, you know, and to send that a particular message to the endpoint that you want, right? What we have also done is we make this slightly easier. So now what we are releasing is we are releasing an alpha version of Server Explorer plugin for BizTalk service. So the way you can get it is you go to VS, go to Tools, Extension and Update, and you go to Online, VS Gallery, just type BizTalk, and you'll find a Server Explorer plugin, okay? You can download and install it, and when you do that, what you will get is you will have a Server Explorer plugin for BizTalk services, okay? With this one, you can just add your BizTalk service environment, so you can say add BizTalk service, and you can provide your BizTalk service environment, what is access control, you know, the details, you specify that, you add it. So in my case, I've already added this BizTalk environment. And you can explore what artifacts are there in the BizTalk service, right? So you can see the bridges that you have created. So if you look at this one, this is the environment that I've created, and I was just trying out with, you know, some of the bridges that I've created. So in this particular example, for instance, I have this incoming orders, right? So if I want to send a message to this one, I can right click and say send a test message, right? It brings up a nice UI, and you can say samples. Okay, where were we? This is test message, right? So you can say build file, and you can just say send. Oops, it failed. Okay, so it means this has failed somewhere. Okay, we can just look at, okay, where it is failing. Okay, did I deploy this? So now that you have a failure, what do you do? You can go to the portal. Okay, so this is the BizTalk service portal that you have seen. And you can see that this is the dashboard. These are a different BizTalk service portal that I've created. This is a storage account, that's why it was not showing up. This is a BizTalk service portal we have. Okay, so it's showing up a BizTalk service portal, and you can click on Manage, and this will bring up the BizTalk portal for your environment, right? So this is the same BizTalk portal that Karthik has shown yesterday about how you can create your B2B app, right? So let's go to that portal, open up that portal. Take some time. Okay. You can go to the tracking view, and you should be able to see all the tracking information, right? So as you see, there is an expert extractor, expert, you know, all this transform, and see, you can see that there is a failure here, right? So you can go look at the details. You can see object reference not set to an instance of an object. Transform message extractor. That's because we just created a transform and, you know, we didn't set it properly, right? The expat. So we can try deploying that again. So let's try the other one, simpler one, and see if this works, right? Yes, this one works. This is a simpler one. I have to find out, okay, what is there in the transform that we've changed. Okay. We probably changed the transform here when we tried to, you know, create the map. Okay, so this shows you how you can do the message tracking. You can look at the tracking information to figure out exactly what is happening in, you know, in your message when it goes. You can also do the same thing with the Server Explorer. So you can expand it, and you know, this incoming order, you can expand this tracking events, and it will try to retrieve all the tracking events in the moment it will come, right? And you can expand it, and you can see what happens in each of the stages, right? So you can see that the pipeline has started, there is some decode stage that happened, decode has completed, validator, you know, validation of the XML that happens. Then you have the request message extractor. So you can see the different stages that the message has gone through, right? And somewhere after the transformation, as when you try to retrieve the XPath, it has faulted, right? So now you can see at what stage it has faulted. So now you can probably you know, open that file and fix that. I think we just defined the property that was not set properly, and that's why it was failing, right? We can verify, we can quickly verify if that is the case, right? So it says that it has failed at this particular stage. And this is probably where it failed. So probably the transformation is not happening correctly. But you could now go and validate, okay, now that it has failed, how do I, you know, at what stage did it fail? And you could, you know, troubleshoot and, you know, try to fix some of these things, right? I know that's difficult. So what we also allow with the Server Explorer is what we call as debug, okay? So this does a couple of things, and I'll explain like how this is done. Okay, for now, what you can do is you can just say debug, and it shows you the different stages that a message goes through, and you can load a message. It was probably this one, right? And this is a message that I want to send, and in every stage, you can see, you know, what is the format of the message, okay, in that stage, and what are the incoming message properties. So if you have defined your own properties, you should be able to send. So right now we are at the transform stage. So you can see that the incoming this was the incoming message, right? And based on the transformation, we have successfully transformed that message, right? So you can see, you know, visually, by walking through each of the stages, and then you can figure out, okay, it is not in transform. The error was not in transform, right? And the error is transform message extractor. So this is the enriched stage after the transform. So now all you need to do is, okay, maybe I didn't put the right XPath. Now you can go and fix that. Cool? Thank you. Fixing that should be easier. You can just take the sample. You just have to follow the steps in the sample, and I assure you it works. Yes, Sid.
Can we plug in additional debugging information? Is there extensibility to the debugging?
The debugging itself is based on the extensibility of the platform, OK? So now let me go into, you know, how you can extend the platform. And I had a couple of slides, basically, which talks about some of that. And sorry, we have to change the order. Okay.
So before you get too far off topic, I have a question.
Sure.
How will I know if my message fails? If I'm an admin and I have these endpoints, bridges coming into my internal service, and these bridges don't have any notion
So there are a couple of what we provide today is, you know, the message tracking information. So when there is a failure in the message, we emit the tracking, and the tracking information goes to a database. You can look at the portal to figure out the failed message. We also have performance counter. So Srivastan was planning to show some of those things. We also have performance counter in the Azure portal where you can go and look at the environment, and you will see that the number of failed misses has gone up. Right? Like if there are three failures, you will see it has gone up by three. So that is one way of looking into it. Does that answer your question?
There really isn't any way to know unless you're looking.
Like a notification?
A notification that I had a message failed.
Okay. We do not have a built-in notification from the system right now. But the tracking information, the database is available to you. You could create your own notification. You know, but we do not have that right now.
Is that something you would like to have? That's something that would be absolutely needed for a healthcare type situation where my messengers are coming in, and if I miss one, I have to know immediately that I missed it. And I don't have time to sit there and watch it all day.
Right, makes sense.
You definitely don't sit there.
Yeah. Okay, so how do you extend BizTalk service, right? So we've seen that it's based on patterns. Okay, you can do basic stuff with patterns. You can stitch them. It's very easy, fairly quick to get things up and running. But typically, you'll find that, okay, out-of-the-box patterns good for 80, 90% of the cases, but there are certain small things that, you know, I want to do. So there are integration we have seen has a long tail that way. And that is why we provide extensibility hooks in the framework. So if you look at it, there are three ways in which you can do you can extend. One is through what we call as message inspectors. So message inspectors is you want to inspect a message when it's going through a pipeline, right? Through different stages of the pipeline, you can hook in your own custom code and you can do, you know, your own stuff there. For instance, We have seen that, okay, we provide validation. But you may want to say, hey, my validation is not, you know, just XML. I want to do my own custom validation. For instance, I may want, you know, semantic-based validation. Or there are certain rules that I need to, you know, make sure that the incoming message, you know, has to obey, right? So you can write your own custom validation. You may also want to say, for instance, when I have an incoming message, I have to log all my incoming messages into my enterprise archiving store, right? Where it will have its own format, you know, so that, you know, I can use it for audit, right? Typically, most systems will have an audit systems where, you know, it is in a typical format, right? So you could write your custom code, you get the incoming message, you can dump it in that format that you want, right? So these are some of the things that you can do with message inspectors, and I'll show you how that, you know, some of those things can be done. We have in Transform, we just talked about there is the C# scripting functoids that we provide. So in case it's not, there is some transformation that you want to do, which is not possible with the out of the box operations that we provide, you can do that. And then at the destinations, what you can do is you can bring in your own custom WCF binding. With a custom WCF binding, you could potentially do, you know, pretty much anything you want, basically. So if there is a destination that you want to write, that's one way of doing that. So, yep. We are working on a lab framework. We'll come to that, I'm just saying today, this is the way you can do extensibility right now. Okay. So message inspector, I said, is you can execute your code between stages in a pipeline. Okay. And writing a message inspector is very easy. All you need to do is you have to implement a class, whatever class that you want, and implement an interface called iMessageInspector. This is an interface that we define, and it has only one method that you will have to implement, which is the execute method, right? The execute method, we will call the execute method And you know, during the pipelines, when the message is being processed, you will have the incoming message, and we'll also provide a context, right? The incoming message has the content type and the stream, okay? So you could read the, you know, what is the incoming message. You may want to change it. You can change that, right? You can modify that. You could also promote properties, okay? So using the context object, there are a set of operations that you can perform. Like you can promote your own properties, custom properties. You can write your own trace logic if you want, and it will start showing up in our trace logic. You could also take in a property from the user. So typically, you have your custom inspector, but let's say you want to archive the data, right? So this example, basically. And you may want to take the connection string, you know, of where you know you should be archiving the data as an input. So you could define, all you need to define is you have to define a property called pipeline property, and you know, just define it, and we'll make sure that the property is set correctly when this is this thing is executed. So you can see that it's extremely simple. There is nothing about the framework that you need to understand. You just focus on, okay, how what do I do when I get the message? Right? So if you go back, okay, sorry. So if I go back now, let me just close this. Okay. Let me just see if I have that opened. It's not open. So let me just open this project, right? Custom code. Okay. So if you look at this example, custom code, right? What are, this is, so I'm picking examples from the samples so that you can go back and relate to, you know, some of the samples, right? Instead of me having to come and, you know, take another example. So whatever that I'm explaining, you can just go back and check, you know, on the samples. So in this example, what will you have, you know, the same thing. I mean, you have an incoming message coming in, you just want to route it. But during that, you want to do certain things, right? So for example, you have an order coming in, okay? And you have a product ID associated with that. But let's say behind the scene, you have changed the product ID. And you don't want to go and, you know, change your application to say, okay, this product ID has changed from, you know, product ID 1 to product ID X. Something like that, right? So the custom code example here will allow you to do that, right? So I'll show you how the custom code looks like, and then we can see how it can be used, right? So this is the implementation of the custom code, right? Can you read? Yeah. You just implement the custom code. You can see that in the input, which is a message, you have a data stream. This is just a stream, okay? We just read the stream, and all it will do is, if there is a product ID, it's very simple. Don't look at the, you know, how the code is written, okay? It's not an intent. You can just replace it with, you know, product ID 2, right? So that is all it is doing, and you just assign back the stream, okay? And once you do that, this is my bridge, and I think this is where we do that, right? You can see that, okay, this is the assembly, this is the class, okay? You take the fully qualified name of that class, and you just put the type which implements your custom code, and that's it. And if you take configuration properties, like the example I was telling you, right? If you have a connection stream, all you can take is, okay, property one, you know, equal to the value, whatever that you want to assign here, right? It's as simple as that, okay? So in the keynote, we have seen some of the customers use some of this extensibility hooks to convert it into PDF and so on, right? So these are some of the ways in which you can do that. So we have already deployed this custom code bridge, right? So if, now if I say debug, right? And I can say custom code, this one, right? So you can see you know, the format of the message, and you should be able to see that, you know, the same example. So you'll find that, okay, there is a transformation that happened, right? And you can see that this, I don't know if you guys noticed, but this has changed to product ID 2 here, right? Okay? So that that is how extensibility works.
Question.
Yeah, sure.
In your example, how did you throw an exception on that
part? Sorry?
In your example, you throw an exception. Sorry, in the real code. What would happen if you threw that exception? Would it fall the pipeline or would it pass the pipeline?
It would fall the pipeline, yes. Because when you throw an exception, you know, it just says that, okay, you're not able to handle that message, right? We will, the underlying engine will trap the exception. So, you know, it's not like your whole entire process will go down and so on. You will be able to see in the tracking message saying that your custom code has thrown an exception. What if you have a new version of the class? Okay, I haven't come to that. Okay, so what happens when you deploy? When you build and deploy this application, is you can see that this is my custom code project, right? I just referenced this project in VS, so it's very similar to the Visual Studio environment that you guys all know. You just reference it. But you can also see that when I reference this one, where is it, properties? Let me just pin this, okay? For this particular properties, we have a property called copy local, right? Which is set to true. And what happens is when you deploy this, right? When you deploy this, your project, we will, if the copy local property of that assembly that you are referencing is set to true, we will also upload that assembly, okay? So in case you make changes to it and you want to deploy it again, right, it will pick up the latest version of the DLL and it will get deployed. That's one thing. Second thing is, it may happen that, okay, you have already loaded the assembly, okay, and it's running somewhere, right? It could be shared by multiple bridges, for instance, right? In which case, we allow you to, you know, refresh the service, basically. Refreshing the service means, okay, I know that there is a new version of assembly that I'm using, that I'm uploaded. So what if you have loaded, you know, an old copy of that assembly, just pick up the new one. So it will just, you know, restart the role instance. It takes about a couple of minutes. We've seen, like, you know, within 1 or 2 minutes it takes. So you can just select this one, refresh the service, and, you know, it will start picking up the new assembly. Okay? Sure. What?
This external assembly, just to understand something about the external assembly, need to be serializable as a BitSock server, or?
No, it's just any other .NET assembly. It's nothing specific. All you need is that you just have to implement that interface. But yes, what you need is the assembly has to be signed, okay? Because you probably know that, right? So it's just another, you know, .NET assembly. You don't have to, you know, think about, okay, is there anything special that I need to worry about? No, nothing like that, right? Yeah, so coming back, right? So some of the power of this message inspector, right, is interesting. So when we started out with the Server Explorer, I mean, we found that it was very useful, you know, more useful than, you know, for, especially for developers, because they can easily see the tracking information. You can list, there are a couple of things, more things that you can do. You can explore what schemas and all. You can double click on a transform right there and it will just show up. You know, you don't have to, you can just explore the environment and, you know, work basically, right? You can import the transform in your project. So it's quite powerful, okay? So one of the things that we also wanted was, hey, is it really possible to see, like, okay, what happens, you know, is it possible to see, like, okay, what happens when a message goes through different stages? And that is when we thought of, okay, why not leverage the extensibility of the platform itself to come up with that? So what we do is, from Visual Studio, the Server Explorer, we use Service Bus Relay to open an endpoint on the fly, right? And then we will instrument that whatever bridge that you see with that custom inspector, right? And all that custom inspector is doing is it will trap the incoming message, and it will just send it back to that service bus relay. Now Visual Studio will, the Server Explorer will get that information, and it can display, okay, what is happening in this part of the stages. You could also, if you want, change the message on the fly through that tool. I haven't shown you that, but if you want, you can, you know, manually edit and you can change it, right? So you don't have to go, and you, if you found that, okay, maybe your transformation was not correct, or at some stage something was not failing, you could just compose a message from that stage onwards and you can change it, right? We also have ability to change the properties that you promote, right? So those are some of the things that you can do. So we just intercept the message, display it, take a new one, and send it across. Yes? So this is just a developer tool. It's not really, you know, anything. So we use Service Bus Relay so that, you know, you could just on the fly create a endpoint where you're listening and it's authenticated basically. So I didn't show you, but the first time you try to debug, it will ask, okay, what service bus namespace I should be using? The ACS name and the ACS, you know, issuer secret and all. No, so this one is we spin up that relay on the fly. So as long as you are debugging, that's you know, we just spin up during that period. The moment you stop debugging, that goes away. Sorry, we can probably take it offline. I'm not able to, you know, grasp what the concern was. But sorry. But you will be needing an internet you'll be needing an internet connection, right? Because if you want to deploy it on the service, you will need that. Okay, so next part of extensibility is custom WCF binding, right? So in custom WCF binding, what you can do is you can bring in your own WCF binding, and you can use it in the destination, right? So let's see. Okay, this is scripting functoid. So let me just open up that example on the custom binding, right? So let me just open this. Okay. So in this custom binding, what we we'll do is, this is where you want to extend the destination. And what we have written here is we have written an echo message binding, right? It's fairly simple. All you probably need to do is implement the method. Where is the transfer element? All right. Which takes an incoming message. We've just written the same message, right? Okay, so this implementation of this one is nothing but you'll just clone it, basically create a buffered copy and you just return that message. Okay? Nothing much, basically. So whatever, what this binding will do is whenever you have a message coming in, it will just echo the same, relay the same message back, okay? And we have customers who are, you know, also using that. For instance, you may just want, if you have an application, just want to call out on BizTalk service, do some basic transformation of the message coming in, but you don't want to route it to an external stuff, you want to relay the message back, there's one possibility, right? So you can do that. You just write your own binding element, and in the message flow that you have, again, you just reference that that project which you have implemented. This is just to make sure that the DLL gets uploaded when you deploy it. If you have already deployed the DLL, you know, maybe either through the portal and all, you don't have to do that. And you can see that this is the WCF configuration. And what you do is you add the binding element extension. This is a WCF configuration. You add the echo message binding element, and you can see that we have this configuration. Maybe if I just do this, you'll be able to read better, right? So we are using this custom binding. This is what we have defined here with the binding configuration called echo message binding element, echo message binding element, which is really doing nothing but just using this echo message binding element that we have created, right? Which is implemented, which was just implemented. And the contract is a request reply, which means, you know, I'm expecting a response back, right? So you just use this, okay, I don't have to save it. And in the custom binding element, this is a request reply bridge. So you have the request side coming in where you can do the validation, enrich, all the stuff, but you also have, you know, the response going back, right? If, in case you want to do further transformation in the response and so on, right? So once you do that, you deploy it, and again, you can see, you can send a test message, custom binding. And this is a transform set. Apologies, this is a alpha release of the tool, so the formatting and all is not that great. But you can see that, you know, you are getting back the transform message, right? Okay?
Good.
Yeah, sure. At this point, so bridges are something that lives on the service environment. Currently, we do not have extensibility for the bridges, but if there's one of the things that you guys want, and I think we have a $100 survey coming up, that's one of the, I believe that's one of the options that you can select. We'll be happy to take that feedback.
Well, I meant just the WCF part of it.
Okay. So, yes, so that's, while WCF provides a rich set of extensibility, it's probably not something that, you know, you may want to work against, because you need to know the details of WCF. It's very powerful, you have different layers of binding elements that you can write, it's very powerful, but at the same time, you need to understand, you know, the WCF framework in order to get to this stage. right? Which may or may not be the right set of things to do. So we are working on an adaptive framework. Just one second. We are working on an adaptive framework where we plan to intend to make this extremely simple. And I'll touch upon like how we are thinking about some of those things. Yes? On the source side?
Yes.
Source side currently is not possible.
So it's not customizable at all.
It's not customizable today on the source side. We only have HTTP, FTP, and SFTP. But we have a lot more sources that we are working on. If you remember what we are working on currently, including a framework that will include the ability to extend on the source side as well. So. Yes, but yes. Quick times. So again, on one part of extensibility is on the C# scripting functoid that you can use and transform. A very example is, okay, how do I calculate the age given, you know, a date of birth, right? It's very trivial if you do it in C#. I know that, you know, just do some basic multiplication, but it's not so trivial to do it, you know, by dragging, dropping, you know, with a visually constructed. So one way of doing this one is you can write your own C# scripts, right there. This is a perfect example. You can just copy paste and put it there, and it should just work, okay? This should be extremely simple. So you just define the C#, define, okay, the incoming parameters, which we are going to map to the parameters, right? So if you have like three parameters, you can have three links going there. Whatever that you return is the output. We'll just match it. Yeah?
Can you call
on external assembly? Yes, you can. So the only thing, yes, you can. So it's not just scripts. Let's say you have your own custom logics implemented somewhere in some assembly. You upload that assembly on the service, and you can just reference it there from here. The only thing is you have to use the fully qualified name because you know, you can't use like using and all the stuff there.
Not
okay?
Like the existing desktop map lets you select from a drop down, you can call a reference assembly from there as opposed to you have to write code that calls the assembly in here.
So when you are writing this code, I mean, it's just a, you know, we don't, so the one thing is that we're not expecting people to write like, you know, a huge set of logic over here. We expect it to be used for simple scripts and all the stuff. All I said was, okay, but if you want to reference a, you know, if you have your logic implemented somewhere in a custom assembly that you have, right, you can just make a call to refer to that assembly and just make a call. That's possible. Yeah, you just write it here. So if you say, you know, you have an assembly somewhere, right? ABC, something like that. The only thing is that you use a fully qualified name is what I'm saying, right? So full namespace and all. Okay? So I'll just touch upon, like, what is it that we're looking at extending the adaptive framework? Because this tree extensibility is good, but, you know, one of the extensibility that we are looking at is, okay, there's so many systems are there. How do I get, you know, all these adapters, right, for those systems? So we plan to have an adaptive framework available. It's not there in GA, but there's something that we are working on. We plan to have an adaptive framework available, which is simple, and you just focus on the external system, not the framework. By that, I mean, we will get out of the way. Let's say you want to write an adapter for some system, right? We want you to focus, you know, 95% of your time, you know, learning about how do you talk to that external system, not about, okay, how does this, you know, framework work? What are the hooks that I need to provide and so on, right? So these are some of the high-level thinkings that we have. So I can quickly show, like, okay, what are the kind of you know, code that you may have to write? Okay, this may not be the real code because we're still working through some of those things, but So let's say you want to write that echo adapter, right? We just showed you, right, how it can be done with WCF, and you started off by implementing a transport binding element, you know, configuring the WCF configuration and so on. But instead, what we want you to do is, you know, define a class called echo, echo destination, which you will probably inherit from some base class, okay, that we give you. Oops, sorry. Right. So what we want you to do is we want you to just write a class, okay? So in the case of the examples that we've seen, right, the echo adapter, how you do that, right? We want you to just write a small class called, say, echo destinations, which will probably inherit from some base class, you know, that we provide. And you just go and, you know, write your, implement the method here. So we'll have a method that you will have an implement, say, request, just return it, basically, right? Something like that. It shouldn't be, like, you know, hard to learn. We were looking at a framework which is, this is obviously not the real framework. It's just a demo. This is our thinking. I just want to share with you that, okay, this is the thinking that we have. So this is how we want you to write, you know, the adapters. A slightly complex example, let's say you want to write an adapter that writes to a blob store, right? You may want to ask the user to specify, okay, what is the connection string of that blob? What is the container name, for instance, right? And what is the blob name, right? Those kind of stuff. And again, we may say that, okay, all the configuration property that you want from the user, you either put it in one small nice place where you just write it, okay, these are the configuration properties that you want. You may have to tag it with some metadata, like some attributes to say this is coming from the user. And you just implement the method saying how you do that. For instance, there's a code which says, okay, you have a storage account, you pass a connection string, right? You create a blob client. These are all APIs provided by Azure Blob Storage, okay? And if there is the container is not there, you probably create a container and all, and you just upload, right? So the idea here is you focus on what is it that you want to do, okay? So the intent here is, okay, I'm writing an adapter. These are the three or four inputs that I want from the user. So I type that. That would be the metadata that you have, the configuration properties that you have. And then you just say, okay, this is the method that that will be executed when the message lands on my adapter, right? So this is a very simple example.